brought to you by the Cannabis Bee Network.
Here is the Cannabis Entrepreneur Show with your host, Scott Jacobs.
Hello, listeners. How's it going today? This is the Cannabis Entrepreneur News, episode 016, 7/21/2014. Yeah, I took a little bit of a break there, quite a bit of a break. Been real busy in my day-to-day work, been working lots of hours. But I'm going to get back and doing these podcast episodes and doing the things I like to do. All right, let's roll into article number one. Entrepreneurs abuzz over Washington's legalized marijuana. Take it away.
Entrepreneurs abuzz over Washington's legalized marijuana. By Ian Marlowe. Source, The Globe and Mail. When he decided to open a marijuana store, the first challenge Tom Beckley faced was getting kicked out of the house by his girlfriend. "I've been sleeping in my truck," he says. But Mr. Beckley, whose top-shelf cannabis in Bellingham, Wash, became one of the first retail stores to open last week after Washington legalized the sale of marijuana, doesn't seem perturbed. In fact, he looks relaxed and is optimistic. After all, his store hit a lineup around the corner on Tuesday, when it opened to sell greenery, bagged with names such as Cheesequake and Catatonic, which sell for about $75, US, for a 3.5-gram bag. In Washington, as with Colorado, the seeds of a new industry have been planted by citizens who voted to end the prohibition on weed. Beyond the jubilation of activists and smokers, though, are risk-takers such as Mr. Beckley who face unpredictability, complicated regulations, rigorous background checks and suppliers who are struggling to get licensed and grow their product. It must be meticulously barcoded, tested in a third-party lab for THC levels, and quarantined before it is sold to the public with tobacco-like warnings. These entrepreneurs see themselves as the vanguard of a new, billion-dollar industry. "It's going to be bigger than anyone's imagined," says Mr. Beckley, who used to work as an electrical inspector for the city of Bellingham. That hope has nurtured business owners through the wild ride of the industry's early days. Store owners only found out they got one of the state's 334 retail licenses through a lottery, and were then given roughly a month to get their stores built and their product, from pounds of loose marijuana to pre-rolled joints and pipes, sourced, paid for and delivered. There are no restrictions on the number of suppliers. But there has still been a scramble for growers to secure licenses, get inspected and begin raising plants painstakingly tracked by the state from seedling to their journey across the state in, for example, the trunk of a silver Honda Civic. Which is the type of car Aaron Nelson is waiting for when he opens the front door of Bellingham's 2020 Solutions on a sunny Thursday afternoon. "Is it here yet?" he asks, looking both ways down the quiet street. He's waiting for weed that didn't arrive in time for a plant opening a couple of days earlier. A misclassification in the state's tracking system, a supplier was labeled as a retailer, meant the shipment was never sent. Because of the industry's infancy, as well as the sheer number of regulations, no one is risking their license or the sector's reputation just to sell weed a day or two earlier than possible. And so 2020 Solution staff spent Thursday afternoon barcoding glass pipes, including a 12-inch monster called the Gandalf, as they waited for their scheduled opening time. 4:20 p.m. At one point, a man driving a large Coca-Cola delivery truck slowed down to ask, "Any free samples?" Eventually, a car drives up, and two middle-aged men open the trunk. "Smells good, doesn't it?" one says, as a strong aroma wafts out. He begins unloading boxes containing 859 small tins that each hold three separate, pre-rolled joints. There is a brief bit of celebration as the weed is moved into the back room, and then the store's owner, Troy Lozano, who also operates two contracting businesses in Bellingham, shuts the door. Pot store owners are understandably cagey. Despite its newfound legality in Washington state, banks don't want to touch the weed business until there is nationwide legislation. Running a marijuana store, consequently, means dealing entirely in cash. Mr. Lozano's store even has an in-store ATM. But mostly the owners and operators are bewildered by the endless number of regulations, which govern everything from the size of signage and how far their stores can be from elementary schools, to what sort of warnings must be on the label and what products they can offer. The state is still licensing companies to produce marijuana-infused edibles, such as brownies and candies, but such producers need their kitchens inspected and approved. But the state's stringent regulations, and the resultant compliance measures, can be a business opportunity on their own. Ben Curran, a Silicon Valley entrepreneur who sold his previous company to GoDaddy for an undisclosed sum, has launched a new business with software tailored to help marijuana store owners comply with the law. It may be a niche market for now, but Mr. Curran suggests a number of U.S. states, such as California, are broke and desperate for tax revenue, and that the industry is destined to grow exponentially, particularly when pharmaceutical companies see the potential profits. Marijuana is just the next batch of small businesses that are ready to explode. Werner Andwieler, a professor with the University of British Columbia's Sauder School of Business, compared the situation now to the era after Prohibition, a lot of smaller players, with inevitable consolidation ahead. Currently, he said, the criminalization of marijuana use is not good economics. Police crackdowns temporarily limit the supply, but leave demand unchanged, thus increasing the payoff for those who want to supply and distribute the drug illegally. Once you bring it out in the open, you can regulate it, control it, tax it, and you can intervene and modify the demand, as we have with tobacco, Professor Antwiller says. That's the economic argument. It's very compelling.
Article number 2, Entrepreneurs Flock to Learn About Medical Marijuana. Take it away.
Entrepreneurs Flock to Learn About Medical Marijuana. By Donna Jerk White. Source, Sun Sentinel. They came Friday for an anticipated high of medical marijuana creating a new industry in South Florida with opportunities for jobs and investment. Some 200 people crowded into Canna at Bay Boca Raton, most taking notes on how they could grow medical marijuana, distribute it or start a dispensary for patients to buy the prescribed pot. It's going to become an important industry, predicted Leon Martin of Royal Palm Beach, who came to the one-day conference to find out the rules, or at least what is known so far, about opening a medical marijuana shop. Alexander Cepeda of Parkland went to the one-day conference to find out what he needs to do to become a certified bud tender, the person who helps patients select their medicinal ganja. It's going to provide a lot of economic opportunities, he said. Governor Rick Scott this month signed the so-called Charlotte's Web medical marijuana law legalizing growth, processing, distribution, and sale of a non-euphoric variety of cannabis for a narrow range of ailments. But for the new industry to really take off, leaders of the Florida Cannabis Coalition said 60% of Florida voters need to approve Amendment 2 in November, expanding Florida's legal medical marijuana trade to include other forms of pot to treat more conditions. Polls show wide support for the amendment to the Florida Constitution, said Tom Quigley, CEO of the coalition who first got interested in the issue when he wanted to invest in legal marijuana operations. Things are changing very rapidly, he said, noting that most of Friday's attendees were interested in the business aspect of legalizing medical marijuana. Carlos Hermida of Tampa, who studied entrepreneurship and earned an MBA from Florida Atlantic University, sees himself in the vanguard of a new industry. He learned how to grow medicinal marijuana in California, where it's legal, and has taught classes on pot planting. This is the future, he said. If it doesn't happen now, it's going to happen.
Article number 3. Marijuana ads signal new strategy and push to legalize. Take it away.
Marijuana ads signal new strategy and push to legalize. By Rob Hottokainen. Source, The Fresno Bee. In the topsy-turvy world of marijuana politics, conservative Republican Representative Doc Hastings of Washington State is the unlikely hero at the moment, lauded for trying to protect medical pot users from federal arrest. In Florida, Liberal Democratic Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz is portrayed as the unlikely villain, a politician willing to send sick marijuana-using patients to prison. Both found themselves in television advertisements that ran in their home states last month, part of a new trend in the increasingly hot pot wars. While marijuana lobbyists once were content to play nice in their media messaging, the new ads reflect a confrontational style aimed at exposing records and getting elected leaders to board the pot legalization bandwagon, or at least get out of the way. The ads are tougher and more visceral, often featuring pleas from ill people who want to use marijuana legally. They portend a new strategy that promises to be on display in the upcoming congressional elections and the 2016 presidential race, when pot might emerge as a sleeper issue. Democratic frontrunner Hillary Clinton is already under pressure to side with her husband, former President Bill Clinton, who reversed course last week by saying states should be allowed to legalize without federal interference. He's testing the waters for her, and he's smart to do that. I'm begging her people to get her to say something, said Adam Edinger, the chairman of the DC Cannabis Campaign, which turned in 55,000 signatures last week to get legalization on the November ballot in Washington, D.C. With Washington State and Colorado already selling recreational pot and 23 states allowing the drug for medical reasons, Edinger warned that politicians who ignore the issue do so at their own risk. He said it was unbelievable that Hillary Clinton's new book didn't mention marijuana. If you're interested in being powerful, you need to take the marijuana lobby seriously, Edinger said. You don't want the marijuana lobby singling you out. Alan St. Pierre, the executive director of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, predicted that 2016 will be the first year that marijuana gets more than a passing mention in a presidential race. With the latest Gallup poll finding that 58% of Americans back legalization, he predicted that many politicians, especially Democrats, will campaign on the issue to appeal to younger voters. He noted that even Kentucky Republican Senator Rand Paul, the potential GOP presidential candidate, is backing more lenient marijuana laws. With pot lobbyists eager to show results, St. Pierre expects no end to the hard-edged ads. Before, he said, the industry ran only pro-pot polemicals aimed at influencing public opinion, never picking fights with politicians. They didn't want to draw their ire, St. Pierre said. The latest ads seek to sway Congress to back a bill to cut off funds for the Justice Department to enforce federal laws against marijuana use in states that have voted to make the drug legal for medical purposes. After passing the House of Representatives by 219 to 189 in late May, the bill is pending in the Senate. When Wasserman Schultz voted against it, a group called Americans for Safe Access ran a series of 30-second television ads in South Florida, calling her out of touch. The group said she was one of only 18 House Democrats to oppose the measure. In Washington state, the group ran two ads, one praising Hastings for backing the bill and another criticizing Republican Representative Kathy McMorris Rogers for opposing it. The latter featured 70-year-old Larry Harvey of Kettle Falls, WASH, who faces a possible 10-year prison sentence for growing marijuana that he used to treat his gout and knee pain. His farm is in McMorris Rogers district. I voted to send Congresswoman Kathy McMorris Rogers to Congress, and she voted to send me to prison, Harvey said in the ad. Chris Hermes, spokesman for Americans for Safe Access, said the group had decided to run a positive ad featuring Hastings to balance its media campaign, broadening it beyond members who'd been aggressively oppositional. We just didn't want to target politicians who have come down on the wrong side of the issue, said Hermes. He said the group expected to run more similar ads. The group has also designed the state-by-state report card, showing how members of Congress have voted on medical marijuana. Hastings and McMorris Rogers declined to comment. In a statement, Wasserman Schultz said she supported evidence-based medical marijuana treatment, but that she'd voted against the bill because it wasn't appropriate to limit the Obama administration's ability to enforce federal laws. Earlier this year, the pro-legalization group Marijuana Policy Project ran ads against two Democratic governors, Mark Dayton of Minnesota and Andrew Cuomo of New York, urging them to back medical marijuana bills. In the Minnesota ad, a man with muscular dystrophy said he didn't understand why Dayton would block the legislation, adding, "I'm a patient, not a criminal." In the New York ad, a psychiatrist made the direct plea to Cuomo on behalf of his wife, who has Parkinson's disease, knowing there's a medication that could help my wife, but that medication is illegal here in New York, is agonizing. On Monday, Cuomo signed a bill that made New York the latest state to pass a medical marijuana law. Dayton signed off on his state's plan in May. Legalization opponents say the efforts to stop pot prosecutions are misguided. Out here in Washington, it's sad to me that the politicization of this has ignored the health and safety risks for kids and communities, said Derek Franklin, Washington State Coordinator of Project SAM, Smart Approaches to Marijuana. And regardless of what folks think of the legalization experiments, part of how this can work is if there's robust enforcement. Franklin said children in the state were getting exposed again to ads with pro-marijuana messages, just as they were in 2012. Ads like this just continue to erode what healthy norms we've got left, he said. Lobbyists predict that their political muscle will only increase. The demographics are going to continue to evolve in our favor, because of the younger voters, because of the older population dying off, said Edinger. And lobbyists expect the issue's popularity to result in new alliances. They noted that many Florida Democrats are backing a November ballot measure to legalize medical marijuana, hopeful it will aid gubernatorial candidate Charlie Crist. Edinger also wants Hillary Clinton to go to Florida to endorse the measure. In Maryland, Republican Representative Andy Harris is getting a taste of things to come. Last month, Americans for Safe Access ran an ad against Harris after he gave a speech opposing medical marijuana and voted against the bill to strip funding from the Justice Department. He's also upset officials in Washington, D.C., by trying to block the city from decriminalizing marijuana. In March, the D.C. Council voted to make possession of a small amount a misdemeanor with a $25 fine, but Congress must approve the law. Harris got the House Appropriations Committee to back an amendment to kill the plan. Congress has the authority to stop irresponsible actions by local officials, and I'm glad we did for the health and safety of children throughout the district, Harris said in a statement. Last week, Democratic D.C. Mayor Vincent Gray urged residents of the nation's capital to stay away from Maryland's eastern shore, a vacation spot in Harris District. And Edinger said pot activists were ready to campaign heavily in Harris District before the November 4th general election. This is serious business, Edinger said. If he's successful, we'll have nothing to do but go campaign and fight to get him out of office, to make an example of him. That's all we'll do.
Article number 4. Medical pot could bring windfall and sales tax revenue. Take it away.
Medical pot could bring windfall and sales tax revenue. By Mary Wozniak. Source, newspress.com. Florida could rake in big bucks in sales and in tax revenue if Amendment 2 passes in November and medical marijuana becomes legal. State projections of sales range from $138 million to $5.6 billion. State projections of tax revenue range from $8.3 million to $338 million. The numbers are based on the number of medical marijuana patients, the amount of pot they may use, and the price per ounce. The State Department of Health estimates there will be 417,000 patients. In addition, the department estimates 250,351 personal care drivers will be needed, as well as 1,789 treatment centers or dispensaries. Meanwhile, the estimated cost of carrying out the amendment is just a fraction of possible revenue, about $1.1 million for each of the first 2 years. Robert Calkin, founder of the Cannabis Career Institute, believes some of the numbers are conservative, but said it's understandable the state would start out that way. Calkin, a medical marijuana expert from California, holds seminars across Florida and in other states on how to start a medical marijuana business. Florida will have to deal with unanticipated costs, he said. Bureaucracies have been created to regulate the medical pot programs in some other states, without proper training provided to carry them out. The National Cannabis Industry Association has its own projections of what the Florida market could look like, including the possibility the state could be the second largest legal market in the country. The industry projects about 260,000 patients, based on its own criteria, said Taylor West, deputy director. That's 62% of the state's projection. All of this stuff is hard to predict, West said. It vastly depends on what regulatory scheme they put in place. Because there is no state data to make estimates, the research office had to look at data from some of the other states that have legalized medical marijuana, said Amy Baker, coordinator of the State Office of Economic and Demographic Research. The office prepared the amendment financial analysis. The figures were in a report sent to State Attorney General Pam Bondi on November 4, exactly 1 year before Election Day. There have been no new numbers since, Baker said. Potential impact. The 16-page report shows the difficulty of trying to gauge medical pot's potential economic impact with no in-state numbers and before the amendment vote is taken. The financial estimate was required by law within 45 days after receipt of the ballot petition, and also was sent to the state Supreme Court. The amendment's effective date would be January 1. The health department would have 6 months from that date to come up with rules, 9 months to issue ID cards to qualified patients and care drivers, and 9 months to register medical marijuana dispensaries. So far, 23 states and the District of Columbia have some form of legal medical marijuana program. In Florida, the state research office started with 6 approaches and narrowed them down to arrive at a figure of less than 450,000 potential users in Florida. They looked at data from states with medical pot laws, prevalence of diseases covered by the law, the number of patients expected to be newly diagnosed with a particular disease, use by cancer patients, grown mathematically to represent patients with other conditions, deaths by disease, and self-reported marijuana use. The health department used data for Colorado and Oregon to arrive at the 417,000 patient estimate, the number of care drivers and dispensaries. One local entrepreneur said the numbers for patients, dispensaries and money to carry out Amendment 2 are off base. I'm going to say the numbers are all low, and I think the people in Tallahassee have no clue, said Mike Janoki of Lehigh Acres. Janoki said he has been researching the medical pot industry and investing in pot stocks for 3 years. He started his own business, MJMoneyMan.com. Janoki doesn't plan to grow or sell marijuana or operate a dispensary. He plans to connect investors with people who need money to get a medical pot business going, he said. I'm kind of the go-between. Big market. West emphasized the industry association's revenue projections are rough, back-of-the-envelope estimates. Florida, regulated in a similar way to Colorado, could do about $780 million in sales in a year, she said. That's based on what we've seen in other states, and adjusted for Florida's population. That would likely make it the second largest legal market in the country, after California. To arrive at the estimate, the association took the Florida population and multiplied it by the average percentage of patients in the population of six states with robust medical marijuana programs, including California and Colorado, she said. That gives us about 260,000 projected patients for Florida. Then the number of patients was multiplied by amount spent per patient for Colorado in 2013, about $3,000, to arrive at the $780 million. That number can be multiplied by 6% sales tax, to make $46.8 million in sales tax revenue. That's on the lower end of the state's projected range. Florida's estimates for sales tax revenue comes from the comparison of other states' stats, including price data from Vermont and allowable usage from Connecticut, the report says. It also includes data from two of the methods previously mentioned, the survey of self-reported users and use by cancer patients, extrapolated to cover other diseases. The numbers assume no sales tax exemptions will apply. At the time the report was prepared, it wasn't known to what extent medical pot would be exempt from taxation. However, after State Bill 1030, also known as the Charlotte's Web Bill, passed the legislature, authorizing low-THC pot for some specific medical uses, state agencies have clarified that medical pot is largely going to be taxable, Baker said. No existing exemptions will be applied on a wide scale, so the report numbers are considered an appropriate range, she said. Would the state set the price of medical pot, or would the free market decide? We don't know at this point of any activity to set prices, said Phil Williams, an analyst for the state research office who helped prepare the report. But the Department of Health has pretty broad authority under the amendment, so we don't want to preclude the possibility that they, or the legislature, may do something at a later date. Charlotte's Web Bill estimated revenue. The state has more recent numbers for projected sales and tax revenues to come from Bill 1030, also known as the Charlotte's Web Bill. The sales revenue is potentially $120 million to $790 million. The range in sales tax is $7.2 million to $47.4 million. The bill became law June 16. It says some low-THC strains of marijuana, including Charlotte's Web, may be used to treat some medical conditions, like severe seizures in children. The analysis was done May 29. Sales would start January 1. None of the patients who take low-THC marijuana would be excluded from the numbers estimated for Amendment 2, but the specificity of the law and the more restrictive regulations would make it a separate entity. National and state market sales revenue. National, medical and adult use, in 2013, $1.53 billion projected national market in 2014, $2.57 billion. Top 5 states in 2013. California, $980 million. Colorado, prior to the beginning of adult use sales, $260 million. Washington, $60 million. Michigan, $60 million. Oregon, $30 million. Source, ArcView Market Research, information provided by National Cannabis Industry Association.
Article number 5. Colorado has proved that legalized cannabis works, so it's about time we let the UK get high. In just 6 months, the state has raised millions in tax revenue and seen a fall in crime. Take it away.
Colorado has proved that legalizing cannabis works, so it's about time we let the UK get high. In just 6 months, the state has raised millions in tax revenue and seen a fall in crime. By Alex Horn. Source, independent.co.uk. To the surprise of no drug reform activists anywhere, the consequences of Colorado's decision have been overwhelmingly positive. The state's governor, John Hickenlooper, predicts that sales of the drug will reach $1 billion in the next fiscal year, raising almost $134 million in tax revenue. Arrests for drug-related crimes and the murder rate have also halved, and tens of thousands of people have found work in the state's burgeoning cannabis market. Astute politicians will be quick to point out that the UK is not Colorado, as they have similarly done with Portugal and the Czech Republic, and that what works over there may not work for us. But with an estimated 2.3 million adults in the UK reporting that they've used cannabis, it's about time we started to think about what it could look like. Fortunately, it doesn't require a stretch of the imagination to see how these policies could translate, as there's a wealth of reputable studies that highlight the benefits. In September, the Institute for Social and Economic Research released a report estimating that licensing the sale of cannabis could reduce the government deficit by between £0.5 billion and £1.25 billion. Another report, published by the London School of Economics and backed by Nick Clegg, stated that our strategy for dealing with drugs can no longer be justified. It's not just statistics that point towards the need for change. A week ago, 80 campaigners, including the National Black Police Association and self-confessed ex-heroin addict Will Self, wrote an open letter to David Cameron. It asked him to stand by the commitment he made in 2002, when he was on a Home Affairs Select Committee, to look into alternatives to the current policing model. While it's unlikely Cameron will be roused to action by this petition, the voice he has increasingly begun to listen to has been calling for reform. Earlier this year, Nigel Farage piped up in support of legalizing certain drugs, a surprising move for a man who has already invested a considerable sum into the beer and tobacco industries. Outside of Parliament, the millions of cannabis users are growing impatient. Colin Davies, who tried to open a cannabis cafe in Manchester, has founded the Cannabis Health Service, a website that aims to provide medical marijuana to those in chronic pain. There is a growing underground scene both online and offline, in which people swap growing tips and trade their different strains. And weed plants are sprouting up in public places thanks to the Feed the Birds movement. This should all give the government enough impetus to reform drug policy, yet the most important points in favor of reassessing our drug policy go beyond the practical. When laws are widely flouted, they cease to be laws, and instead become instruments to punish certain members of society. When the government sacks its chief drug advisor for stating scientific facts, it exposes itself as arrogant and unheeding. When billions are pumped into prohibition without producing any significant reduction in drug use, during a period of austerity no less, it makes a mockery of our system of governance. There is no doubt that correcting our drug policy will be a complicated endeavor, but at present the UK's illogical attitude towards narcotics weakens the integrity of our democracy. Colorado might seem far away, but with the list of proven benefits now becoming too large to ignore, there has never been a better time for drug reform in the UK.
All right, that's all I have for this episode. Till next episode, have a good day, good night, good week. Bye-bye.